Okay, so we will begin Parshas Vayetze. It says Vayetze in the top. It's not. It's actually Parshas Vayeshev. I apologize. I was about to say that. I want to share with you tonight an article by Nechama Leibowitz. It's been a while since we've done anything by her. I don't know when I found this article, but I know that the tissue that was clean as the bookmark inside the Nechama Leibowitz was from Shul. And the shul has not had those tissues in a really, really long time. But I wanted to share with this topic with you because it's always been a topic that's intrigued me. The identity of this ish that kind of comes into the story of Parshas of Mechiras Yosef. And I kind of like, I felt that the that Nechama Leibowitz's article was good, but there wasn't like quite like the finishing touch on it. Until I got an email from Rabbi, I was looking for something this week by Rabbi Sachs for a project for one of my other children, and when that happened, I found that he spoke with the mysterious man as well this week. So it really came together, which was good, because late yesterday afternoon, I still didn't have a topic or makoros, so that's why it's on Google Docs. I hope that the psukim aren't too hard to read with all the spaces and whatever. So... Nice. All right, we'll take a vote. Does everybody, would everybody prefer it in Google Docs from now on? Really, all right, we'll see what happens. It's also it's not my printer and it's not my copier. That's why last time was really bad. But all right, we're figuring it all out. Fine. So, Mechiras Yosef, of course, is a terrible story. How could it be? How could the brothers do that to Yosef? So the answer is, what do you mean? How could they do it to Yosef? Do you know how annoying Yosef was to the brothers? So, again, you have to be careful every once in a while. Like, you know, was Yosef bullied? Were the brothers, you know, just being antagonized? I don't know what the answer to that question is. But what I found fascinating, and this is proof that the Parsha really speaks to us through our life experience, is that a kid came to me today, and I was just thinking about this. Kid comes to me today and goes, Rabbi, I can't take these kids. They're just so annoying. They're so frustrating. I'm like, what are they doing to you? Even though I knew the answer because he had told me yesterday. He goes, they told me that I am eating my math book. And I'm like, for real? I'm like, are you eating your math book? No. I'm like, so then what's your problem? Right, like that's a very sympathetic answer, but it's true. Because yesterday when he came to me and said, I'm eating my math, they're writing, I'm eating my math book. I said, like ketchup, mustard, like which one? And he didn't appreciate that. But really at the end of the day, I think it's...
He's going by the principles.
Yeah, I think it's really like this. Like sometimes you just have to realize that you got to let it go. People are annoying. That's true. But if you don't get, if you don't allow yourself to get annoyed by them, like you move past it. But Yosef's brothers perhaps do something brilliant. The dreams bother the brothers so much. And yet, what do they do right afterwards? After the second dream, Baviv Shamar to Davar, dad listens and watches and wonders what's going to be. What happens? Pasuk Yud Bet, Vayelchu Achav Lirot.
They leave,
and they go to Shechem. Now, why do they go to Shechem? So there's a lot of answers why they go to Shechem. Perhaps the fate, I think it's Rashi's answer, but maybe I'm wrong, is that they want lirot, Rashi adds in the word, it's not lirot etzon aviyem b'shechem, because you could have written lirot etzon aviyem b'shechem, but it's really lirot otam. They went to take care of themselves, meaning it was a pleasure trip. And perhaps the tzon was simply there as an excuse to go away. But I thought maybe a possible answer is, why do they go? Because after Yosef is so infuriating and drives him so crazy, and then it's Vaviv Shamar Tadavar, they have to listen to the fact that, you know, dad didn't say anything, which, by the way, it ticks the brothers off all the time. Why is it that dad does all these things happen, and what's dad's response? He doesn't say anything. We want dad to get angry. We want dad to get worked up, and he's like, whatever.
Weren't the dreams about the future?
Yeah.
If you're concerned about the future, couldn't you argue that they went to go look at the Yerusha? So now, Vihan Mishkan, we're going to go, so this is the way it's going to be. These are going to be, this is our inheritance. They went to go visit their inheritance.
It's possible, meaning I think that they're, I don't think the brothers are 100% certain that this is the future as much as they think this is their brother's, you know, daydreams.
Right, in other words, you say, your dreams are, this is the future. Great, you can keep dreaming about the future. We're going to go visit our future, and it's right there.
I mean, that undersells what the brothers view their future as, that they only view it in purely financial terms. I'd like to believe that the brothers also view their future as spiritually, the spiritual legacy of the Jewish people, and as part of that.
They're really the spiritual legacy, let me tell you.
No,
all that stuff they've been doing, all that really good stuff they've been up to, man, those are real examples of spiritual legacy.
So first off, I think there's lots of people that are very spiritual that get into fights with people. I'm saying I can think of a lot. See, Josh, that's not fair because I was not taught.
People are annoying you. You live with it. You get over it.
Anyhow, moving on. So I think it's possible that I do think that to some extent it's possible that the brothers actually look for peace and quiet. So let's go to Yosef. And let's get away from Yosef and let's see what happens.
Even if nothing else, there certainly was let's get away.
Right, let's.
For us or whatever it is, let's get away.
Right, so, but I think that it's a healthy thing.
It was a mature thing, yeah, for sure.
Again, we can ask what if questions all we want, and there's no answer to this question. Really, the same way there was no answer to some of the stuff about Lavan. If he would have done X, Y, and Z, would it have been different? But let's say Yosef hadn't shown up at this point in time. Let's say Yosef didn't go to Shechem, meaning dad didn't send him on the mission, or dad sent him on the mission, he's like, dad, I don't think so, I'm not feeling it. Or dad sends him on the mission, he goes, he gets to Shechem, and they're not there, and he's like, fine. I did my job, I go home. If the brother...
I didn't tell him where
they... Right, if the brothers would have come back a few weeks later, or even a few months later, would time have passed... And they wouldn't have felt the same way that they did towards Yosef. I don't know.
So they wouldn't have felt that way now, but it just would have happened again. It's not a one-time thing that this only happened once and they lost their minds. It's just a continuous type of interaction. So if it didn't happen right now, why do you think it wouldn't have happened in 6 months from now or a year from now or whatever it is?
I'm not saying it wouldn't have, but sometimes like what happens, like there is, you have a incredibly intense negative experience with a person. And then you see them the next day and they do something else that's not such a big deal and you blow up on them. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have a really intense negative experience with the person and then you don't see them for a few weeks. And then when they do something that's annoying to you, it only reaches that point. You don't boil over because there was no reason to. So I don't know. It's food for thought. Again, it's a completely theoretical question, which anyway, when we're done... But
are you saying it's healthy that after you annoy your wife and just leave her for like a month, or...?
I'm
going to...
No, it's when your wife annoys you, you leave her.
If that's your take home... Anyhow. Yeah, so...
No, he's saying take away.
It's clearly a theoretical question that doesn't matter. What I hope when this whole shiur is over is that you'll see that part of this is, you know, built into the answer to some of our questions tonight. So what happens after the brothers go to Shechem? Vayomer Yisrael el Yosef. Yisrael says to Yosef, Halo achecha ro'im b'Shechem. Your brothers are tending to the sheep in Shechem. I want you to go there. Now it's so crazy. Yaakov is this wealthy man. He's got a huge flock of sheep, which means that he probably also has a large number of servants. Send one of the servants. Why does he send Yosef? So one of the Mefarshim remember who says Yosef was like the overseer of this. Yosef was like the CEO of Yaakov, right? And so what he's doing is he's saying, listen, I can't send a servant for this kind of work. I need to send you because we have to make sure that the sheep are strategically placed and blah, blah, blah.
Yet another needle to the sons.
Right. I don't know. It's good I don't know who the Mefarish is. It's not Rashi. I can say that definitively. But yeah, I don't know if I necessarily need to buy that. I actually, believe it or not, this is like even bigger than like validating Josh. But I said it's even bigger than giving you a compliment or validating your opinion. But I actually believe that, and we're gonna see a lot of Mefarshim tonight. It's actually almost exclusively Mefarshim tonight. But I actually like Rashi the most. Just suck the air out of the room. Right? It's like, whoa. But anyway, I want to share with you a lot of different, you know, Mefarshim tonight. And I want to try to, like, hash out the psukim. But what I want to actually do is, anybody familiar with Nechama Leibowitz other than her name?
Yeah.
Okay. No, so right. So she has books. It's the 6 or 7 volume set that a lot of people in, I shouldn't say a lot of people, but some people in the modern Orthodox circles may or may not get for a bar mitzvah present. Okay, and happens to bat mitzvah present. Happens to be awesome. I love it. When I was in 5th grade, my best year in school ever. Awesome two teachers. My Rebbe, fascinating, was a Torah Vadas guy, 7th generation Yerushalmi, right? Just to give you a little bio of him. So, like, that's a pretty, like...
And he broke the chain.
Interesting mix. He did come back to America. That is true. I think his bar mitzvah was on the boat from Palestine to New York. But he was a Talmid of Nechama Leibowitz. So he would go back to learn with her in the summers in Israel. So what... And that was, like, in 5th grade. And then, like, later on in my life, when I first started teaching in Henk, Rabbi Yasger was also a Talmud of Nechama Leibowitz. So what she used to do before the books were printed in English, which were translated, not by her, but before the books, she had these things called Gilyo Note. The Gilyo Note were like packets. And she would send the packets all around Israel. That's like, so this is like conceptually, it's so wild because like in 2019, to think about it like this, she would send the packets around Israel, and what were her Talmidim do? Now her Talmidim were like the gamut. Like if you went to one of her shiurim, you would have like a chassidish guy and somebody coming in pants, a woman coming in pants. Like that's how far like the spectrum of her Talmidim were. She would send out these Gilyo notes. And then what would happen? Her Talmidim would answer the Gilyo note, stick it in an envelope, and mail it back to her. She would then take a pen and painstakingly go through all of the answers that she got and send it back to them. This is what she did, and this is how the conversation of Torah went. But if you've ever read an article by Nechama Leibowitz, there's two ways to do it. I always do it like the cheating easy way. It's not just read her article and I'm like, done. I got all of her questions. I got all of her answers. But if you prepare it without, meaning she says, look here and you look there and try to figure it out, you get a much deeper appreciation of like where she's coming from. But what she does, which I've never really like, you know, shared at the Chabura, is at the end she has additional questions. And that's the beauty of it. There's no answers there. So you have to figure it out on your own. Tonight, what I want to do is I want to share with you, A, how incredibly beautiful the art of teaching by Nechama Leibowitz was by trying to figure out something her way, but also by trying to understand her additional questions. Because I don't have the answers to that. But I think that that's going to be the conversation that's going to guide us tonight. So Yosef says to dad, "Vayomer lo hineni, fine, you want me to go, I'll go, whatever it is, it's fine."
Is that not a weird spot for Vayomer lo hineni?
Well, dad... Should
that be after Vayomer Yisrael al Yosef, Vayomer lo hineni?
No, his answer, hineni, is like, he goes, I want you to do this, here I am. Meaning, it's like, I'll do it, right? Like, mission accepted. Hineni is not a great word in Chumash. Usually hineni is like, I want you to do something that's really bad for you, you might die. Akeh des Yitzchak.
Yep.
Mechiras Yosef, which is, of course, you can call it, this is Akeh des Yosef, right? It's like almost like the same thing. So fine. Vayomer lo lech na reid shloma chacha v'shloma atzon v'shiveni davar. Because I want you to go check on your brothers, the peace of your brothers and the peace of the tzon. V'shiveni davar. And bring me back like this information. V'yishlacheyu me emek chevron. V'yavo shechema. He sends him me emek chevron from the valley of Chevron. And he comes to Shechem. So Rashi points out that Shechem is Makom Puranut. It's never a good place for the Jewish people. Dina. The splitting of the Malchus from David. There's never good things that happen in Shechem. And yet he's going there. So take a look at Rashi. This is a fascinating Rashi. Rashi says, Me'emek Chevron. Valo Chevron Bahar. Chevron is what? In a mountain. On a mountain. Shenemar vayalu banegev vayavod Chevron. So they went from the south and they come up to Chevron. Element, right? So Rashi is saying, Elame eitza amuka shel oto tzadika kavur bechevron. Rather, what is Rashi, what is Yaakov saying when he says, or what are the psukim saying? Me emek Chevron, from the valley of Chevron, is that it's from the Eitza, the advice, amuka, the deep advice of the tzaddik that's buried there. This whole thing, Rashi says, is to actualize the Geria Zaracha, which was part of the Bris Bein Absarim with Avraham and God. But here's the cool thing. Was Rashi ever in Chevron? Presumably not. He didn't have Google Images. He didn't know what Chevron was. So how does he know that Chevron is, you know, not an Amek? It's not, you know, down low, but it's up in the mountain. It's on top of a mountain. So he bases it on the Psukim. Vayalu Banegev. They went up from the Negev, and they're going up to the top of a mountain, Chevron. This is what I found amazing. Actually, if you've ever been to Chevron, what do you know? That Chevron is, there is a mountain, but there's also stuff in the valley. But Rashi, again, this is my own theory, but it's unbelievable that Rashi has to base his picture of Chevron on only one thing. Whatever Tanakh tells us. So from Rashi, he says, it doesn't make sense. Me'emek Chevron, it didn't exist. Now somebody that would learn it much later on might say, what do you mean? There was a big valley in Chevron. We don't know if they lived, you know, where in Chevron they were living. Did they live up by Maras and Machpelah? I don't know. But
also, Vavayalu could have been like in Kedusha.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean geographically.
Or just like when, if you start right. south, locally, my kids right, always north, think like yes. If you start south and you go north, like you're that's going up. But you're not necessarily going up. It depends. If you're on a mountain in the south and you're going down the mountain up north, what are you doing? You're going down.
Up north.
But you're going to use the phrase, Vayalu, you go up north.
Right.
The same way you go
down
right. south.
Right.
Down to Florida.
Like,
right.
Part of our vernacular.
Yeah. Right. Fine.
Why does it matter that he was going Me'emek Chevron?
No, but Rashi's point is, there is no such thing as Me'emek Chevron. Chevron is just a mountain. So he says, what does that mean? It's Me'etza Mukha. The truth is, it's probably not so fair for me to say that this is my Lanyas Daiti here is my Anyas Dot a lot. Because really Rashi gets this from who? He gets this from the Medrash, which is the Tanayim, and the Tanayim lived where? In the land of Israel. So they had a much better picture, but you know, of what Israel was. But they're saying that this Pasuk Me'emek Chevron is double meaning. Meaning maybe there was a valley in Chevron, maybe that's what it was, but also it's Me'amuka or Eitz Amuka, the deep wisdom of God that he gave to this tzaddik that was buried in Chevron. So what happens? Vayimtzayehu ish. A guy finds him. V'hine toeba sadeh. And behold, he's wandering in the field. Who's wandering in the field?
Well, assume Yosef.
Who?
What?
Could be either one of them.
I don't know. Right? Meaning, it could be Vayimtzayehu. The person found him, kama, v'hine toeba sadeh. And he, the guy, was wandering in the field.
And the second part,
would it? Or, and by Ishaleo Ishlemor, Mat Tivakach, and he's saying to him,
I'm lost, what are you looking for?
He's wandering around in the field. Maybe it's his own field. Maybe he has, like, you know, some business in Shechem. Right, and he sees Yosef come, and he said, everybody says the Ish is the Malach. The question is, Vinei To'eba Sadeh, who's the one that's wandering around in the field? It's not clear. You could read it as, he finds the guy while he, Yosef, is wandering around the field. Or it could be, he finds this guy who is wandering around the field. Either way, the man says to him, what are you looking for? So Rashi says, Vayimtza'ehu ish, ze Gavriel. This is Gavriel. Shenemar vayish Gavriel. It's a pasuk that says, vayish Gavriel. Now, you're going to tell me, in all of Tanakh, I know this, I told you, I like Rashi here. It's not presenting well that way to start. But
not the whole Rashi.
But Rashi says, vayish Gavriel. What do you mean? Like, there's no other place that there is an Ish in Tanakh besides Gavriel. So truth is, I saw Rabbi Harris. I wanted to ask him, because when I was doing this yesterday, I remember that when I walked into his class last year, at some point, there was like, he was talking in some subject about an Ish, and like random Ish in Tanakh is sometimes, like Rashi jumps on and says, this is great. I don't know who the guy is. We have to give him like a name, so let's just call him a Malach. Like, why? Like, why can't people
use the term Ish by Amram, but you know, Ish me base levitz.
Yeah. So, but why? But there, Dan, the reason why it's not a problem is because that's Perek Bet, where we don't know who this guy is. But at the end of the Perek, what happened to this kid? This kid gets a name. We know his name is Moshe. And what do we know about Moshe? We know Moshe's father was Amram and his mother was Yocheved, so all of a sudden, boom. He's not an unidentified person. For whatever reason, the Torah wants to not identify him just yet. But we eventually do. But what happens when we have a random guy that has no name? What do you do? So Rashi's like, it's got to be a Malach. We do that midrashically, we do that all the time. Like, anytime there's somebody that we don't know, like, even when they have a name. Perfect example. Hagar, Keturah. Right? Why do they have to be the same person? Just convenient. We don't know anything about Keturah other than she has six children she sent away and she's married to Avram. So, I don't know. Lump it together, it works. Where's another one? Yocheved. Right? Who's Yocheved? She's also Shifra. Right? Which, by the way, scary as it seems, we're going to be there in just like 3 weeks. We're going to be done with Bereishis. But yeah, why do they have to match up together? Does it matter? No, it doesn't really matter, but the Medrash doesn't have anybody to say Shifra is. And it works. Do those Midrashim bother me? Oh, it doesn't bother me. Am I willing to accept it? I will go on record saying that I'm okay with Shifra and Yocheved being the same person.
What about Pua and Miriam?
Yeah, it's a package deal.
I know, but that doesn't work so well.
Why not?
Because she's too young.
You're downing Mincha and Shul. Some guy walks up to you Tuesday afternoon, Mincha and Shul, and says, hey, I'm looking for my brothers. Have you seen them? You're looking at him going, who the hell are you?
Like, I probably wouldn't say that, but
who are your brothers? I don't know who you are. Who are your brothers? Like,
they were 12 brothers.
Pasuk Tezayin is Vayomer Tachah. Right, the guys.
Can I just go back to the Ish for a second?
Yeah.
Here's the other problem that I see. This whole story is doomed if we're going to say the Ish is Gabriel. Because didn't we learn already by Shadom that like Gabriel is the Malach of destruction?
He's not a good guy.
Right, Gabriel's, if it's going to be a Malach, that's a crappy Malach to get. Just saying,
it's foreshadowing.
We're going to get kicked off sheer enjoyment. They're going to be like, what is going on in West Hempstead?
You're going to start bleeping out some words in there.
Sorry, everybody. No, but my point is, like, that's not really the Malach that we'd want.
Well, no, but you can say, but that's it. Like, this is destruction, meaning like that's...
The thing is, this was doomed from the get-go.
Well, the question is, did Yosef know it was an angel, right?
So it wasn't their fault. They didn't know, the brothers, because the whole story, it seems like...
Yeah, I think there's...
Talk about free choice now. Right.
Yeah, we haven't done that in a couple months. It's a good time to throw that one in. So, yeah. So, really, whatever. The question is, So yeah, what does he say? Vayomer da'achayinu achim mevakeish. So there, the guy, we're going to call him a guy for now, according to Rashi, the malach, the man says, what are you looking for? So he says, I'm looking for my brothers. Now, I don't think that's an unfair thing to say, meaning like, I came to Shechem, my brothers were in Shechem, I'm looking for them.
But like Josh says, like, who are you to know who your brothers are?
Right, so I like, no, but so right, so we've no, so we've dealt.
Who are you? This way a color
no,
jacket.
No. I want to know why we're not doing Yehuda.
This is Shechem. This is not.
I actually, we've done Yehuda Tamar a lot of times, and because we have like last week was so like perfect at your house. I was like, as I was saying so many things, I was like, whoa. It's like, I don't know how that would have gone down. But anyway, yeah. No, but the thing is, they act, I believe.
No, but this is also different. They're not initiating the conversation. So this is not, you know, to use Josh's example, this is not.
Yeah, the guy wants to know, can I help you?
First, what's going on?
Right, Josh, I think the better question is, like,
why
how?
Why does he say who
yeah, what, like, what would, so how bad. In the world, like, would they know? Like, there's thousands of people in Canaan. How would they know that who his brothers were? So I think the answer to that question is it's very clear. They had white beards, kippahs on their heads, right? Like they all looked like that. But no, I mean, I
slaughtered the city.
Right. No, I do say that somewhat. I do say that somewhat tongue in cheek. Although, you know, when Malki and I do compare notes about teaching, you know. I don't remember how the conversation started, but when the conversation ended, the punchline basically was, you know, the brothers probably didn't wear kippahs, right? And she goes, I know, and I've said that to some of my colleagues, and they're like outraged when I say that. And I'm like, yeah, like it's fine. Like they didn't have to wear kippahs.
Smarty to say they wore turbans.
But anyway, I think the answer is the brothers were probably famous or infamous. Or both in Shechem. And probably they did look different than the locals. Meaning I'm sure that that Yaakov and his sons did not necessarily wear the clothing of the Canaan, which were probably more provocative. That's another piece. And on top of that, right, they're all brothers. Like if Yaakov has 12 kids, there is a decent chance that even with different mothers, there is a good chance that one of the brothers looked like Yosef. Because they shared enough DNA. So if Yaakov's genes
they're
were...
also first cousins.
None of those brothers...
I know, but they all... That's true. But they all had the same father.
And they're first cousins.
I don't know.
But you have cousins who look similar. They're brothers.
No, right. I don't...
They're
yeah.
brothers and first cousins. No, that, so, first, yeah. There's a lot of DNA.
But I think, right, I don't think that's so crazy. But anyway, that is not the topic of tonight. So if you don't like that, I'm really at peace with that.
I've never heard that one before.
So, Hagidanuli Eifu Emroim, where are they shepherding? I never would have thought. If you would have asked me, this morning when I woke up, I was like, I don't know if this is going to be a full 45-minute shiur. I was like, it's 6 or 7 psukim and a couple of mefarshim. If you would have told me that 30-plus minutes in, we were still on the first of the sources, and better than that, we really didn't even ask a single question yet, I wouldn't have believed it. But okay, that's the joy of learning. So vayomer ha'ish, nasu mizeh. So the guy says they left. Kishamati omrim nelchu dotaina. I heard them saying that they're going to Dotan. Vayelech Yosef acharachav, and Yosef followed his brothers vaymtzayim bedotan, and he finds him in Dotan. Vayiru tomirachok, they see him from far away. Uveterem yikrav aleihem vaynaklu oto lamito, and before he even got close, they decided that they wanted to kill him. Vayomru ishelach elachiv hinei balach alomot alazeh ba. What their first words are, behold, here is a dreamer. They couldn't let go. Even if they went.
And this ish is not Gabriel.
Which ish? No, yes, that is not. Here, we have to pick two people. So we say, well, anytime there's two crazy people Shimon in the Levy, family, yeah, it's going to be Shimon and Levi. It's Rashi Lashitaso. Fine. Okay. So they couldn't let go. Yosef comes. He didn't even say anything. But his mere presence. bothers them so much that they want to kill him.
The language of how he got there is also different than what it should have been. It says, Vayelech Yosef Achar Echav, Vayimtzeim Bedosan. It should have said, Vayelech Yosef Dotaina, Vayimtzeim Etzachav. It's not, the Lashon there is that, like, he was chasing, they were eluding him, and he was chasing them, and then he caught up.
It could be.
Which is why they were probably upset.
It could be.
We told everyone to Shechem, like you said, I went on vacation, and then you pull a switcheroo when you go to Dyson, and this guy still finds you.
I think that's certainly a plausible explanation, and it's definitely a possible reading. Three questions, maybe four. Who's this man? Vayimtzeiuish. Who's wandering in the field? Who's wandering in the field? What? What difference does it make who's the person?
No, the wanderer. What does it make who's wandering?
Or else, who cares? How does that matter to the story?
It doesn't. It matters to the
story. Did anybody eat bread? All right, so David, you should bench for Hurachum. Look. I would say like this. Meaning there's certain shiurim where I would say, listen, there's a nice message. Hopefully it's packaged well. We're entertained. We always eat well. And like, fine, we go home. Maybe you share it on Shabbos. Maybe not. Then there's like last week where we just like ended, right? Like, I think that was last week, right? It was like, all right, because there was no nice message. I wasn't really going for anything like that. We analyzed a group of psukim. I had a lot of fun.
We had a halachic question, though.
We did have that halachic question. I certainly don't like, it's not my realm of interest, but okay, fine, whatever, we did it, done, but there was no, like, whatever. Here, I think there is a question. Does it matter? I don't really think, like, tonight, if Rashi is wrong and it's not an ish, or it's not a malach, it's an ish, can we all go home and sleep okay? I'm not going to lose any sleep over this, but I find it fascinating to see that all the Mefarshim struggle with who this Ish is. And personally, I've always been bothered by this story. But I think not enough. But I'm so sleep deprived. But anyway, the real questions that I care about are the first and the fourth. The two middle ones really don't matter to so much. Who's wandering in the field? Does it matter? You could read it either way. But we'll touch on that briefly. How would this guy know that they were the brothers? Mm-hmm. All right. Yes, no. He clearly met some people. He figured they were Yosef's brothers. Maybe the numbers or what they were doing. You know, my brothers are here shepherding. Whatever it is, fine. He sends them there. But the fourth question, I think, actually, David, even if you don't like the first question, I think that the fourth question, you have no choice. You have to deal with. See, because the Torah, well, I'm about to get to that. The fourth question is as follows. See, the Torah is not meant to be, it's not meant to be a history book. And we don't need, like, the blow-by-blow. Would the story have been any less amazing if this Ish didn't exist? Right? At the end of the day, all I need to know is that Yosef finds the brothers. So if it had told me that Yosef went to Shechem, and then from Shechem he went to Dotan, and it left out those couple of psukim, yes, we might sit there and wonder, how did he get from Shechem to Dotan? How did he make the trip? Why does he go there? Who cares, right? But do we need this like conversation? I actually felt last night when I was like doing the notes, I was like, even though the words are not the same, it feels a little bit like Yosef and Parshas, like Yaakov and Parshas Vayetze at the Be'er. Do I really need that conversation? Hi, my brothers. Where are you from? Haran. Do you know Lavan? Yes. Like, why do we need that? It's like the painful conversation that a lot of parents have with their children every night. How's your day?
Good.
What'd you learn?
Nothing.
Right? Okay, my tuition dollar is hard at work. All right, but you know the conversation, so why do you have to have it?
It's all allegory. It never happened anyway.
So, yeah, I don't think so. I think there's the beginning you could play around with. But anyhow, that question, why I need this little story, why I need the back and forth, why I need the back and forth with this guy, I think is important. So let's take a look at the next Meforesh, the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says, "Vayimtza'eyu ish derech ha'pshat echad me'ovrei derech." Anybody want to translate that?
Passerby.
So,
world traveler.
Good. So both of you translated it, but you neglected to translate half of the Ibn Ezra.
Derech ha'pshat.
Why does... Right. He says, derech ha'pshat is echad me'ovrei ha'derech.
It's a knock on Rashi.
So the question is, right, Nechama Leibowitz wants to know, why add these words derech ha'pshat? Now, that we know that the Ibn Ezra has the benefit of having learned Rashi. We also know that the Ramban had the benefit of learning both of them. So it could be that it's a knock on Rashi. And he says, Rashi, well, I don't know why you have to come up with this whole crazy thing about it's Aish Gavriel and it's a Malach. No, he's not a Malach. Who is this? Pshat. Echad me'ovrei ha'derech. That's all it is.
Well, he's pointing out that Rashi here is not pshat.
I believe that's what he's getting at. Mm-hmm. Fine. We're going to skip the Kliyakar.
In general, Rashi's
pshat. So by the way,
yeah.
The reason that the Ibn Ezra... See, the Ezra would have been a problem. This is just a guy in the field. But this Ovrei Derech, what are we doing in the Sada? In other words, he's not on the road, he's in the Sada. The Sada is a place of work. It's somebody's property. You don't just go on to somebody's property.
Well, the Jews actually have property in Shechem, which is where they would have gone. But no, it's meaning Shechem was a bit...
He's not just a Chem Ovrei Derech. Ovrei Derech is I see a fellow traveler on the road. That's like, I'm driving down the throughway, I stop at the rest stop, that's one thing. Or I see a guy on the shoulder, that's one thing. It's something else to, you know, make a turn into someone's driveway and say, hey, you know, knock on the door and say, hey.
Okay.
It's not possible if Yom was buddying the road.
Or as opposed to, he's lost, he's wandering around.
Then when you're driving the highway in the Midwest, you see the corn right next to the shoulder of the highway. I mean,
there's a lot of real estate back then.
So, right, so I don't know. I think he's just saying he's a Ovrei Derech, he's a passerby. Could he have been a local guy in Shechem? Well, actually, probably what's motivating Ibn Ezra to say it's an Ovrei Derech is Shechem should not have had people there. So, right, so if there is no people there, then by definition, this Ish is somebody that happened to have gone through the area.
No one's re-inhabited that area?
I know only two people really take the Mekoros, and I don't take any insult to it. It's fine. They live underneath Jeremy Stender until he gets frustrated and cleans it out. But did I? Oh, all right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You could bring it next week and put it in. You could put it into Jeremy Stender. But if you do take the Mekoros, I highly recommend you read the Kliyakar. And if you don't take the Mekoros normally, it's good Kliyakar to read. So take the Mekoros, save Jeremy's face, or just take a look at it on your own. These Mekoros tonight are legit Shemos. Like, it's got real God's name in it. So if you take it home, like, just be mindful of that. But let's take a look at the Ramban. Because I think the Ramban is fascinating. And when we read the Ramban, I want you to think, is the Ramban aligned with Rashi? Is he aligned with Ibn Ezra? Or is he aligned with none of them? He finds a guy who's wandering in the field. So the Ramban says he was straying from the road. He's looking for the makom of the place where they would pasture. The Ramban answers.
Wait, so again, is this implying this is Yosef or is he implying this is the Ish?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. Only one of the Mefarshim, like, clearly says who's one, but I think you could say that it's...
Right, because he's looking for a makom.
Yeah, it could be.
You think that'd be Yosef?
I would think it's Yosef, but I don't want to say that definitively.
Okay.
So he's looking, and the Ramban then says, "V'yaricha katubazeh." The psukim are like such extra stuff. Ki sibot rabot bawilav shayaruilach zorlo. He should have just gone home. Aval kol savalich fodaviv. Why is he draying around in Shechem? Why is he looking and looking and looking in Shechem? because he wanted to do what his father's, you know, he wanted to do what his father's wishes were. The luho dienu od ki agzera emet vacharitzut sheker ki zimein lo akadosh baruch hu mor derech shalom midato lavi yom yadam. Ramban says, the truth is that God zimein lo, God appointed, God brought him a mor derech, a person along the way to do what? To guide him?
Doesn't have to be a malach.
To his brothers. So they're, according to the Ramban,
he's a shliach. Doesn't have to be a malach.
According to the Ramban, who is he aligned with?
It sounds more like Rashi. Doesn't have to be Rashi.
So Rashi says it's an angel because he's got to get there. Ibn Ezra almost would be like, he's just a guy.
Yeah, why? He's a shliach.
Why was the guy there? It was a passerby. The Ibn Ezra does not go all philosophical on us to say, no, you have to understand, do you not see the hashkacha pratis or klalis, whichever one you want to say here, God is orchestrating all of this. He says, no, there was a guy on the road who happened to be like, oh, you know what's so crazy? I saw your brothers here a couple hours ago, and they said, don't. Now, I'm not saying that the Ibn Ezra is saying that, but
it doesn't have to be a mouth.
But the Ibn Ezra,
it's just a random passerby.
Well, Hashem could have sent the random passerby.
He sent him as a shliach.
But the Ibn Ezra, doesn't write that. The Ibn Ezra just says he's derech pshat is there was a guy. Now, do you want to say it's like trying so hard to bite my tongue, but I'm not going to say it the way I was going to say it, but you know, there's like hashgacha pratis stories, like, you know, where you hear them and you're like, whatever.
Like how the story with
right. No, and then there's like hashgacha pratis, like I was supposed to go on that airplane, right? And I called the cab company. I called the wrong one. The cab showed up like an hour late. I missed my plane, and the plane crashed. Like that feels like hashgacha pratis. Happened to go to Stop and Shop as opposed to Western Beef, and it happens to be that Cinnamon Toast Crunch is on sale this week. Great! I don't know if God really cares that much about my Cinnamon Toast Crunch as opposed to Life cereal. Do you know what I'm saying? I think like there's like somewhat of a gap there. I don't think the Ibn Ezra is saying, no, God had nothing to do with this. But I don't think the Ibn Ezra is saying, I have to like get all into that. The Ramban says, no. Zimin lo kadosh baruch hu mor derech. God wanted this to happen. God made this happen. God orchestrated it. But it doesn't matter what the ish is. Is the ish a malach? I don't know. He could be echad mi ovrei derech. And he could also be Gavriel. So the question is the Ramban Rashi? Is the Ramban Ibn Ezra? Or is he his own entity? So what do you think?
He doesn't care. I think he's his own entity. He's Rashi.
So you could argue he's closer to Rashi. You could probably argue the other way too. That's in the Chama Leibowitz's question.
But he says that the wanderer is Yosef.
Who does? Yeah, it seems like it. Okay. So the Bar Tanura, we're not going to look at it inside, but he says that Yosef was one that was lost and the Malach helped him find his way. Das Kanim, it's cool. I know half the table will hate this, but it was a good one anyway. He says To'eh. To'eh. Stands for, right, he's wandering in the field. This story is so significant because it shapes all of Jewish history. To'eh, the Tav is the 400 years of Galus Mitzrayim, Ayin is the 70 years of Galus Bavel, and the He is into the 5,000th, you know, whatever millennia of Galus that should end, you know, B'mheira B'yameinu.
And the Vav?
He spells it chaser.
That's the six from.
So anyway, I could have even said that David would not like it, but okay, it's 9:41. We're out of time, more or less. So I want to share with you Rabbi Sachs. Rabbi Sachs has an article called, I think it actually was called, if not, more or less this. He's an angel, and a man who's an angel, but he doesn't really know it. He says, sometimes a person is an angel. They orchestrate big things in the world, and they have no idea even the greatness of what they're accomplishing. They're simply there. God puts them in place, and they do amazing things. and yet they have no idea. He quotes two stories. It was actually like Rabbi Sacks' life. It was like two wonderful stories with almost no Torah content. It's not normally his thing. One of them I knew I would remember his name, and the other one I knew I would never remember her name. But anybody know who Eddie Jacobson is? No?
Yeah.
No, what?
No.
No? So Eddie Jacobson, right. Clearly, I read stuff that, like, I love reading history. Eddie Jacobson was Harry Truman's best friend. Why does that matter? So Eddie Jacobson and Harry Truman, yeah, they owned a store together in St. Louis, I think, or Kansas City, one of those. I don't remember which one. And it went like bankrupt. And Eddie Jacobson was like a really nice guy and didn't like take Harry Truman to like task to pay up his end of the bill. And they remained really, really good friends. Except Eddie Jacobson stayed living in like Nowheresville, America. It wasn't St. Louis, Kansas City, right? And Harry Truman became the president of the United States. In 1948, when they knew that the state of Israel was going to be declared on May 15th or May 14th, the big question was going to be, would the United States recognize the state of Israel? Now, Harry Truman was very pro-Israel. The State Department was incredibly anti-Semitic. And there was no way the State Department was going to push in that direction. And Chaim Weizmann desperately wanted a meeting with Harry Truman because he really believed if he got that meeting, he can convince Harry Truman to do what he needed. But Harry Truman was ticked off because a couple of rabbis wrote some nasty articles about him. And he like said, I'm not meeting with rabbis, I'm not meeting with Jews, I'm not meeting with Chaim Weizmann, it doesn't matter. And somehow the Zionist government in Israel, pre-government, whatever, found out about Eddie Jacobson. And they went to Eddie Jacobson. And they said to him, you got to go to Harry Truman and you got to tell him this whole thing. And he calls Harry Truman up and says, I want to meet with you. He's best friends, of course, no problem. He comes to him and goes to him, Harry, I know that your greatest role model was, I don't know, Andrew Johnson or Andrew Jackson, one of them, right? I should have read up on the story a little better. He goes, well, I also have a role model. He goes, my role model is a little old man. And his name is Chaim Weizmann. And he desperately wants to meet with you. And you won't meet with him. I'm asking you one favor, meet with him. I can't tell you what Harry Truman said because it would have to get bleeped out. But he cursed at him and said, fine, I'll meet with him. And he met with Chaim Weizmann and they had an unbelievable meeting. And Chaim Weizmann said, Harry Truman said to Chaim Weizmann, listen, I give you my word and I never lie. I give you my word that I will vote in, I will recognize the state of Israel when you declare your statehood. I will. And don't listen to anything you're going to hear, but I'm going to do it. Rabbi Sacks says, that's an angel, but he doesn't even know it. Look at Eddie Jacobson. How? How did he end up in this place? The answer is, I have no idea. But God put him there. God had him meet and become business partners with Harry Truman. Why? The business went south. It went bankrupt. It didn't do anything. Why? Because God needed Eddie Jacobson for later on. Now you're going to say, oh, God doesn't really need Eddie Jacobson. He can make another Eddie Jacobson. But God wants to work it in such a way that it's done. B'derech HaTeva. That perhaps is really where the Ramban is coming from. Does it have to be as extreme as Rashi that he's an angel? No. And does it have to be as whitewashed as the Ibn Ezra to say he's just a derech over me'echami over a derech? Not necessarily. But what goes through all three of them is that God is saying, I put my stamp and my seal on this story. Yes, I am the one that's orchestrating all of these pieces. And that's why we need this story. Because the story can't just be interpreted as, Oh my God, we have a dysfunctional family. They can't get along. And boom, Yosef ends up in the pit and he gets sold. Yes, but look at how the story starts. May Emek Chevron Rashi says, this is not just Yaakov. And it's not just Yosef. And it's not just the brothers. But what is it? This is God from above pulling all the strings to make it all work out. And I'll end by just taking a look at the second pasuk we looked at. Vayomer Yisrael el Yosef. Why doesn't it say Vayomer Yaakov el Yosef? Because this pasuk is not something that has to do with Yaakov and his family. It's so much more. And it's so much bigger. It is the destiny of the Jewish people. Perhaps even if you don't like the Das Kanan. But it's the destiny of the Jewish people that's going to go on for close to 3,500 years. And it's starting in all these psukim. But in all of these, from start to finish, it's God making it work. I'll end with this for real. The last pasuk on the second page. Yosef's first words, he speaks. Since Etachaya Nuchi Mevakesh, he hasn't said anything. He doesn't say anything during Mechiras Yosef. He doesn't say anything on his way down. The first words he says, Ashes Potiphar says, sleep with me. He doesn't answer her. Vayimain, he refuses. But when she finally pushes him and he has to answer, what does he say? Enenu gadol b'bayit hazeh mimeni. There's nobody greater than me in my master's house. Lo chasach mimeni me'uma ki motach basharat ishti. And the only thing that he holds back is you, because you're his wife. Ve'eicheseh haragdol azos. How could I do such evil things? Can't the pasuk end there? Isn't that enough of an argument why he can't sleep with Ashes Potiphar? My master's trust is on the line. How could I do it? But he ends v'chatati le'elokim. Yosef, from the beginning to the end, Yosef recognizes that God is with him. Why? Because I think Yosef can't miss it. Because Yosef sees this encounter with his guy or angel or whatever he is and says, this has to be. How could it be that this happened? God must be doing this. Right? He sent, right? Me'emek Chevron, that echoes with him. And even his trip down to Israel, to Mitzrayim on that caravan is what? The Chot Tzuriv Alot. Spices. But those guys aren't spices. Those are oil merchants. It's the Middle East. He feels it. He knows it. He recognizes it. This story is so much bigger because Yosef is so much characteristic of what the Jew in exile is supposed to feel. He's supposed to feel that life stinks, often and a lot. But I know that everything is coming, starting and ending from Hashem.
He says that to his brothers, that's the first thing he says. Don't be angry.
Right.
I know this is all...
In the, yeah.